Hello, this is Jay Nemro, and you're listening to The Life Autistic. This is episode number 610, and I've got an interesting title for you. You guys will like this one. It's called The Golden Wedge of Ophir. Now, if you're not a person that reads the Bible very often, I read from Scripture. I'm currently in the Book of Mormon, so if you have a problem with that, get a grip, number one. These are the Isaiah passages. These are the same things that are written in the book of Isaiah, in the Old Testament. Now, most people just skip Isaiah because Isaiah is hard to understand. I'm taking kind of an interesting passage from this because interesting things have come up. I'll get back to the whole reference to the Golden Wedge of Ophir, but I thought it was going to make a great title, so we took it. Now, I don't like to make this current events type of thing, because, you know, who's interested in hearing about the current events, because in 5 minutes there will be a new current event to start talking about, and you don't want to do that. But but sometimes current events do bring up important philosophical issues. So I'm going to talk about this, and you guys can just do whatever you want to. This is another one of those episodes where I'm probably going to offend you, or make you angry, or make you say, I don't like Jay anymore. And in subsequent episodes this morning, I think I will shine a light on why it's important that I say things that might be controversial. I don't say them because they will be controversial. I say it because often the truth is controversial. What is honest is controversial. And that's probably how this is going to go too. This morning, I woke up, and I wake up to National Public Radio, and morning edition, kind of the NPR News morning show, and they had this whole report. Well, no, they didn't have a whole report. It was just a little snippet that said that the RLDS, now that perks me up because I am a member of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. I am not a member, not the RLDS, of the FLDS Church, which is the Fundamentalist Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. Kind of an offshoot, but not really. More of a splinter group. They are a group that has decided that one of their main focuses in life is to be polygamous. And so, anyway, I'm not going to do a whole lot of lead into that. Anyway, I think the guy's name is Warren Jeffs. He got put in jail not long ago. The 14-year-old girl had gotten married off to some old guy, and she didn't want to be married off. And of course, there's certain laws. It was vaguely illegal to do that. Warren Jeffs, I guess, pushed her into doing that, and so so he's gone to jail for it. I don't know how much for it. It's become a fantastic little spectacle in the United States that this is happening. It might even be a world story. I seem to recall that it was in the British news. I don't know how much further it got than that. You know, is this being kind of a look at the crazy things those funny Americans do type thing? Anyway, just yesterday, after the whole circumstance, this same sect, same church, had a ranch in Texas, and they had kind of a colony set up there. You know, there was several men there, and all their wives and their children. And, of course, you know, you have to bring up the whole wives business because there's usually more wives than there are husbands there because that's the way polygamy tends to go. So, it's just the way it is. Many women, many wives, so it's polygamy. Just in case you wondered what that term meant besides, oh, horrible, wicked, weird garbage, you know, that's what it means. Anyway, they had gone into this place. Apparently some 16-year-old had called saying that she had been abused. They have not found the 16-year-old girl. There is some word that maybe this is trumped up. Maybe it was just a trumped up charge to justify them doing the government doing the stormtrooper thing and breaking into this compound. It kind of smacks of the Branch Davidians in Waco, Ruby Ridge. Was that in Wyoming? Yeah, I'm pretty sure it was. Anyway, it kind of smacks of those kinds of things, you know. And it's always kind of funny that it's always for the children, isn't it? The atrocities that we perpetrate on each other in the name of children, it's like, guy, children sound like the ultimate tyrants, you know? It's like, you know, we went and we destroyed everybody in this city, you know, because Saddam Hussein told us to do it. And it's almost like, we're going to go in and we're going to bust up this whole affair down in Texas, this Texas ranch, because the children wanted us to, or the child advocates wanted us to. It's for the children. Those children must be suffering down there. That's not right. So anyway, okay, all these children got put into these quote-unquote shelters, you know, and I'm not saying that because they weren't shelters. I'm saying that that's how they were slanting it to make it sound better, that they had stormed into this place and practically drove everybody out. These poor wives were all victims, which I doubt, and all these poor children of these evil, wicked, nasty, patriarchal, lordly men, you know, and who's to say what they are? We don't know. All we know is little bitty snippets of news reports that make it sound like it's such a villainous thing, and we don't know. Maybe it was. I don't have a clue. But there was some hay made interesting on earlier in the week, because in Texas, apparently, when you have these child cases, every child has to have a lawyer. And apparently there's 350 kids, so there was these 350 lawyers, biggest child custody case, apparently, that there's ever been. So that was newsworthy. Oh, boy, isn't this great? Oh, this is cool, man. Talk about a media circus. Anyway, so what finally happened was there was one, I guess they just made judgment yesterday, or maybe even late yesterday, early this morning. I'm not sure. And they decided that all those kids were going to go into foster care. And I started to rant, and I started to rave, and I'll tell you why. And I'm going to offend some people here, because I'm going to accuse our society of being incredibly hypocritical, just painfully so. And chances are, you're going to side with the government, with society, in their hypocrisy. You will say, I am glad they were being hypocritical, because you want to stomp out I guess the crime must be nigh on to murder. Being a polygamist must be a crime of such great magnitude that, you know, these guys who were perpetrating it, you know, you would think that they were holding these women and the children that they were forced to bear at gunpoint, you know.
Thou shalt have children or I will,
you know, take you out with a machine gun type stuff. I don't know. I don't know how it went there. For all I know, that was the way it was. But I don't know. I'll be the first one to tell you that I am somewhat naive. I don't do a ton of research. Sometimes I do, but often I don't. Because it doesn't really matter. I'm not trying to make a judgment on this particular case. What I'm trying to make the judgment on is a much larger issue. I'm always about the larger issues. The deeper the deeper matters that go to our very souls. What on earth are we about? Anyway, so all these kids got put into social services. The first thing that came to mind is, whoa, what on earth kind of a decision is that? Why on earth should these women have their children ripped away from them just because they have what is construed by society as a sick religious belief? Now you can question all you want to whether you think it's good that there are children in that environment. You can say that. You can say, oh, we can't let children stay in those circumstances because what kind of weird ideas are they going to have? What kind of weird, twisted lives are they going to lead because they were raised by polygamists and people saying that polygamy is good? Well, let me shine a little light on if you have that particular outlook. Let me shine a little light on your hypocrisy, on your absolute hypocrisy. And I mean it as a society, not particularly as individuals. Because many people are also against some of the things that I'll be talking about. But some people aren't. So let's just explore this. I find it interesting because nobody's standing up and fighting, at least you don't hear about anybody standing up and fighting for the rights of these women. Except for those who say that they should get away from these disgusting, sick, perverted men who must be sex maniacs. And the women's lib people are all for the women, but I don't see anybody standing up and saying, wait, these women should be able to keep their kids. I haven't heard it. Maybe there are some people, but they certainly aren't making the news, sadly enough. Commentary on our society. Okay, let me go ahead and bring up some alternate things. Go to any public housing. Go to any site of public housing. It's not a place. Go to public housing and see what goes on there. Most decent people try to stay away from such places because they've heard that they're places of crime and all kinds of problems, and most people don't want to look at it. Now, I've been in I've been in jobs where I dealt with these people all the time. And, these were some pretty screwed up folks. I'll be really honest with you. Single parenthood has become something of a cherished institution in the United States. In the world, really, we tend to make single mothers into noble, sacrificing women, far beyond anybody else. You know, we tend to look down on women who marry and have children as being not independent enough, you know, a stay-at-home mom is so demeaning, stuff like that, you know. But yet we vaunt women who, out of wedlock, have children. Now, we especially reward women who are rich, you know, mostly the Hollywood set or the music scene set, who have these little kiddies without marriage, practically without fathers. You know, the father never really ends up being much in the picture, or you wouldn't think he is. Certainly very separate lives. We tend to call these women noble, you know, probably because we also tend to call women victims. This is also happening in this case down in Texas. You know, on the one hand, these women are being called victims of these ugly, nasty, horrible, polygamous men, and yet we're ripping their children away from them because we're afraid of what kind of weirdness, perhaps, that's what we're afraid of, some kind of weirdness that they will inject into their kids, like some kind of weird drug. And yet, in any public housing place, what you typically will see is a lot of single mothers and their kids. Some of them are on drugs. Not just the kids, the mothers. I'm talking mostly about the mothers here. You know, there tends to be, you know, men coming in and out of their lives. Sometimes for pretty interesting reasons. When I was working for WIC with the really poor, there was always the stories of gold-digging men, you know. Men who would come and kind of park. They were drifters and wanderers, and the only address they would have is the address of their girlfriend. They would often impregnate their girlfriend, and when things went bad, when the fun and excitement, I guess, didn't work out, or if he decided to start trying to play a father role to children that were not his, he would be, you know, out the door, and it ended up being a revolving door. A lot of people coming and going in and out of this woman's life, in and out of these children's lives. Sometimes they would call their boyfriend uncle this or uncle that, and this child would end up having an entire stream of uncles, you know. This is somebody that was special in my mom's life for 3 or 4 months, and we still spend time together. And I'm talking about the kids here, you know. If the kid connected with that man somehow, they might try to have some kind of an interesting, rather stinted relationship that usually went along with this guy kind of wandering in and out of this woman's life. And, you know, it being lovey-dovey and there being intimate relations. No, that's that way. And they were fulfilling sexual urges. And then something would sour and he would be gone again. And the kind of weird things this does to children. And I'm sorry, I equate that situation with that situation in Texas, with those 350 kids that are now going to go into state custody. You know what? If that's true of those people, every single town should have at least 100, 150 kids. And I mean small towns. Towns the size of Tucumcari, where I live. A town of 5,000. Should have at least 100, maybe 200 kids constantly in that system, because we should clean all the kids out of public housing. Because this isn't a good situation. Now, you can't blame it on some religious, quote-unquote, cult. You can't blame it on something like that. You can blame it on something much bigger, much more pervasive. Just the lack of proper relations, a lack of marriage, having children out of wedlock, not being serious about marriage. I think I did a whole podcast on this. So there's one example of our hypocrisy. Why aren't we rounding up all the kids from public housing? That's obviously not a good circumstance for them. Why don't we round them all up just like we did those kids in Texas? They're in little compounds. Isn't public housing kind of usually done kind of in something of a compound? The ones in Tucumcari tend to be, they are not distributed throughout the town. They're in clusters. You know? Clusters of kind of, you know, people with troubles. And that's being kind. To say that they just have troubles. Why don't we round those kiddies up? Why don't we say interesting things about their parents? And how nasty and terrible they are. Why aren't you rounding up every kid whose father, no matter how many wives that father has, went to jail? Isn't that what the drug war is all about? Let's round up all the people who do drugs because they're bad and they're a bad influence. And why aren't we taking away their kids from the mothers? Obviously the mothers were enabling this kind of behavior. You know, we can paint a picture of this compound in Texas, this ranch in Texas being, I don't know if it's a compound, this ranch in Texas being a place where, you know, guys that talk like this with shotguns or, you know, forcing their kids to marry old men for their sexual jollies and whatever. Says, but guess what? That happened ad nauseum, not just in the public housing thing. That's just a place where it happens prevalently. You know, why aren't we just taking the kids from those circumstances? Seems like the same kind of thing. We kind of made a blanket statement about the FLDS church that they basically need to have all their children taken away from them, put in the foster care. Why don't we do the same thing with public housing? Same basic things are going on, same atrocities, same screwed up kids, and they come out of there. Why not? Not prudent? Not prudent? We can pick on things that we like to call a cult, but yet we don't pick on just our cancerous society. Hypocrisy. Now, I'm not coming out and saying that I'm a wonderful, fantastic person, that I don't do some things that are hypocritical too. I hope not. I try not to. And when somebody points out that I'm being hypocritical, if they're right, I'm not just going to do it because they say I'm being hypocritical. That's giving them way too much power. Usually because most people aren't very intelligent. Sorry. Don't mean to be rude to any of you guys. Nobody is. I'm not particularly intelligent either. You can't let, you know, as a person, if you see hypocrisy, number one, you're supposed to excise it out of yourself, and you're supposed to point it out to other people. After you've done a good job of trying to rid yourself of some. Now, I try not to be hypocritical. I'm sure I am in some ways, because I can't, you know, One can't be constantly analyzing every little thing you do because you'll never get any work done, you know. If you worked at a gas station and you spent your life sitting in a chair kind of picking your teeth and thinking if something you did last Tuesday was a hypocritical thing to do, they wouldn't pay you money. They would fire your butt and get somebody who's at least going to be sweeping the floor. So, yeah, you can't spend your whole life doing this, but these are big things. These are big things because, you know what, people are going to jail for this. Families, whatever weird construction of families that you tend to call families, I think we call any circumstance where there's where there is at least one child there, we end up calling that a family, which I think is crazy. Because there's all kinds of weird stuff. You know, that get the kind of respectability that family life is supposed to have, you know. We don't talk about incest very much. It's pretty prevalent in this world. It's kept very, very quiet, and we don't talk about it. There's at least four people just on my block, which I'm pretty sure aren't just pedophiles. They are. It's incest. They aren't finding other little kids and drawing them in and having weird sexual relations with them. It's typically dad and uncle and stuff like that. Ugh. Sorry. But let's not get into that. That just talks about the inherent sicknesses and the fact that we put on blinders about it while we punish certain aspects of it and we ignore the others. Usually it ends up being prudent, which is silly, you know. It's hypocritical. Okay, anyway, let's do one more instance of it. You know, people say, oh, polygamy is the plague of our age. And you're going, what? The fact that you're married to more people? Let me tell you what. Let me give you another picture, and then you can say this. What is the difference? Because, of course, these quote-unquote marriages are not sanctioned by the state, therefore, they don't really ever happen. These are just a bunch of people getting together, and they're having sex. They play like they're married, but technically, legally, they aren't. There are no wives here, and you'll see that in the fact that I think during all these proceedings down in Texas, that was the first thing that got thrown out. There are no, you know, there are no marriages here. There are just simply people having sex and living together in circumstances that most people would find kind of weird. You know, one guy having sex with four or five women, and the four or five women aren't trying to kill each other or trying to kill the guy over it. They're actually acting like this is okay. I guess that's really the sick part, is that they haven't got all violent and decided to take it to the Jerry Springer show. Like decent people would do, right? I always thought that was funny. We really are becoming the Jerry Springer generation. He should be the President of the United States just because so many people like his way of doing things. Let's set up cat fights. This is at least fun to watch. You know, it was mostly women who were in something of an unintended polygamous situation. Some guy two-timing him. You know, I'm spending time with both girls. Happens all the time. If it is a corporate CEO doing it, we call it him having a mistress. We feel badly for the little wifey-poo that may not be getting serviced properly. You know, and we can poo-poo him, but nobody goes to jail, nobody suffers particularly. You know, at best, you know, a conniving wife sucks a whole ton of money out of corporate CEO when she stages her final coup, when she talks to a lawyer, and the lawyer says, hey, we can really get rich off of this guy, you know. And your first job is to stop loving him because he's a cheating philanderer. And you go, what? Congress is full of them. I don't know why we have a problem with these people. We keep making them powerful. Anyway, so it's just funny. Funny hypocrisy that we live with. Okay, I'm sorry. I'm not going to go there. I was going to talk about gays and lesbians raising kids and how a whole bunch of people find that disgusting too, but because gays and lesbians are the are the blessed race. Sorry, they aren't a race. They are either a third or a third and fourth gender. I'm not really sure. They are a different gender. We can't touch them. They become the untouchables. They may do whatever they wish. We just hope that they don't destroy everything that we hold dear, and that they don't want to put some kind of gay drug into a popular energy drink, you know, so that everybody will want to have sex with the same, with their same gender friends. That's what we're hoping for, because I'm sorry, they have free reign. They can do whatever they want to and do it with somewhat impunity. You know, the fact that they want to have marriage just means that what they're doing now is perfectly acceptable. They just want to have all the tax breaks that a married couple have gotten in the past. You know, that's what that goes to. But to go the same way, you know, do you want to spread what some people consider to be kind of a sick idea? And now it's getting to the point to where you can't call it sick. You know, it's good, it's healthy. They love each other. What are you going to do? And, you know, and now it becomes the whole thing of, can they adopt children? In some states they can, in some states they can't. They tend to go to states where they can adopt a kid, and once they have it, then they'll move back home to the state that doesn't condone it, but then you can't do anything about it, right? Because all the states say that you have to honor something that's legal in another state as long as it wasn't consummated in your state. So, yeah, you know, it becomes all this weird thing. And it's like, we're really hypocritical. We're ultra-hypocritical on the whole gay issue. You know, when you hear about what gay people do and we don't talk about it, we hear about the kinds of interesting things that they do. A lot of pedophilia comes out of the gay community. Because these guys are attuned to sex. Sex is what defines them. How they have sex. Which means you have to be having sex to begin with. The whole thing about in high schools that you have these groups, you know, you call them off, what are they called? Quest, queer, whatever. I don't know. I don't get into that particularly. The fact that these things are in, like, high schools, that they have these groups, and they get to have a club, because you can start a club on any subject you want, and you can't touch gays. Gays are blessed. Gays are untouchable. You know, it just indicates the fact that, A, number one, if somebody's wondering about their sexuality, and that's what it is, it's homosexual. When they say same-sex attraction, that's not what it means. That means two guys have been playing with themselves. Playing with their genital regions. In all kinds of interesting ways. That's how you become gay. You don't become gay any other way. I'm sorry. I know people are trying to say, well, you were born that way. I said, no, you weren't born that way. You know. No, I'm sorry, that's just me. I don't want to get into that controversy particularly, because it's not important. What's important is the kind of hypocrisy we do. What makes the relations between two gay people, or three or four, menage a trois, for instance, and polygamy? The only difference is that one thing has laws against it that are actually being enforced, funny, and the other one has some laws against it that actually aren't being enforced. Most places still have sodomy laws. They aren't enforced. They say you're only allowed to have sex with somebody you're married to. Well, people universally ignore that one. I'm confused about why anybody's getting weird about polygamy. What the heck is that supposed to, you know, what the heck does that mean? In a world gone upside down, why are we getting weird about people who hang from the rafters? on purpose. If the world's already upside down, everybody's on their heads anyway. Why are we getting weird about the ones that are on their heads on purpose instead of just, that's just the way it is? I don't know if that's a good analogy or not, but that's what it kind of comes down to. So it becomes kind of our hypocrisy. And so I find that really interesting. In a world that's both puritanical and laissez-faire, it's really interesting to see what we get weird about. And I'm sorry, when it comes down to the motivations, you can't look at the surface thing. I'm much more willing to say that this is government finding a way to break up, you know, to break up something that it's fearful of. People who are scoffing the law. The fact that they can make it into some kind of a moral issue and try to make themselves look like knights in shining armor just as icing on the cake. You know? It's just about extending the power of the police state over our lives. Scaring people and saying, you're going to behave the way we have dictated is the right way to behave, or we're going to be breaking down your door and tearing up everything, ripping your family to shreds if you don't allow us to do whatever we wish. That's what it smacks much more to me of. Rather than, oh my goodness, we're doing this to save these poor children from living a life that's just horrible and sick and demented. And you're going, you know what? We have horrible, sick, demented lives going on all around us. All around us. The public housing, your local public housing place is rife with it. 4 people on my block probably are sick, twisted freaks. I could be construed as one because I'm sitting here doing this. Number one, when does it start? When does it stop? Who's normal? Who's okay? And whose job is it to police that? And I'm of a mind to say, you know what? I'm more of a laissez-faire type of guy, as opposed to being puritanical. I tend to be rather socially conservative in my own living, but somewhat liberal in what other people can do. Other people can do whatever they want, as long as it doesn't touch me and as long as I don't have to get in contact with you. I guess that's why I homeschool, too. You know, I don't want people, you know, I don't want people getting too weird about the way me and my wife conduct our family life. You know, I'm sure somebody could come in, and this is true of every single family. I'm sure some gung-ho social worker could go into almost any family, find reasons that they could justify to a judge to have the children taken out of that home. You know, they don't like this, what's going on, that's not healthy. We don't like this. They don't keep their house clean enough. Their yard isn't being kept up good enough. There's too many weeds out there, and the kids may develop asthma, and we can't tolerate that. You know, there could be a whole slew of, the whole realm of child welfare is fraught with peril. And there's a good reason why we tend to fear these people, because of the amazing power we've given them. And as a result, we become less of what we could be because we become fearful. And that's what brings up the golden wedge of Ophir. It comes from a verse from Isaiah. vague though that may be, in the Old Testament that some people might not think is worth much, but very important, and Isaiah was actually prophesying about our day. Actually, a little bit about the future. But mostly about our times. And he said, a man shall be worth more than fine gold. Now, I'm paraphrasing because I don't have the scripture in front of me. A man shall be worth more than fine gold, more than the golden wedge of Ophir. Now, I don't know what the golden wedge of Ophir was, but I imagine it must have been pretty darn amazing for the simple reason that every town didn't seem to have a golden wedge, or else he would have mentioned just a golden wedge, because everybody would have said, oh yeah, you know, I know the golden wedge. We have one right in the middle of town. You know, it's in a glass box. We keep it there so we can be impressed. Look, we've got a golden wedge. It must have been some kind of spectacle because it was some place that was the only one that had it. Kind of like the place that has the world's biggest ball of string or you know, something along those lines. Tourist attraction. I would imagine that would be what the golden wedge of Ophir was. It must have been a pretty big wedge or a pretty impressive one. One, I would imagine to say, of great value. Now, when I was reading this particular part of Isaiah, and I was reading there this morning, strangely enough, it always seems to coincide with what I'm thinking, is when I pick up my scripture reading, often it's related to what I'm thinking about. He only mentions a man once, and he is very glowing. You know, that's pretty glowing. Worth more than fine gold? I would have to say that a lot of women don't think of men in general that way. You know, our society tends to really not like men. Men are the root of most problems. You know, they're evil, they're wicked, they lord over women, they hurt children, you know. That's why the prisons are full of men. They're not full of women or children. Any of that. Anyway, so, although it's interesting, though, that the men that fill prisons today are raised by, were children at one time and were pure and wonderful, most of them were raised primarily by women. And I'm not just saying that as an observation. I'm saying that because there's studies done. Most of the men in prison come from broken homes, which typically means that they were only raised by their mother. You know, dad, if he had any influence in the home, it was only for a short time. It might have been powerful influence for a couple of days or weeks, or however it was done. But by and large, raised by women. So if you think men are to blame for broken families and you want to blame that on men, I tend to blame it on the fact that couples are not marrying, are not raising children. We tend to have single people, you know. And I'm sorry, men being raised by women don't become men. I'm sorry, males. Males that are raised strictly by women struggle to become men. And I mean men as in what Isaiah is saying in that scripture. A man is worth more than fine gold. Now that made me think of something else. A few chapters before in Isaiah, they were talking about the daughters of Zion and, you know, all their wanton stuff, all their wimples and their crisping pins and blah blah blah, and everybody gets weird about, oh, what does he mean, you know, shoes that tinkle while they go, they mince while they walk, yada yada yada. And I never really got into the whole trying to figure out what this is and what that is, because it was just silly. But the whole package tends to tell you these are pretty haughty, lifted up, you know, thinking very well of themselves women. And you can look at, you can find modern corollaries to all that. Big earrings, you know, hoops like tires, you know, all that stuff. Well-set hair, you know, and how wonderful it all is. But then apparently something happens, you know, all the men go off to war, and all these women are just in horrible spot, you know. Everything that was good about them goes bad on them. You know, they get flabby, their hair falls out, you know. Instead of beauty burning, you know, you can try to draw specific examples of it, but this is something's going to happen. Whatever was wonderful and beautiful and haughty about these women, they're going to lose. Now, it's going to go badly. Then all of a sudden, having the first verse of the next chapter, I can't tell you what chapter it is, there's some beautiful, blessed day, and the blessed day, strangely enough, is when seven women go to one man and say, you know, we'll take care of our own needs. We'll break our bread. We'll, you know, we'll take care of our needs. Just let us be called by your name. And then all of a sudden, God took away the reproach. Isn't that an interesting statement? Now, I don't often ask Christians about that particular thing because I know, number one, that they probably try to ignore it. Or number two, they just say, well, that means they'll be going to their pastor for help, and God will bless the men. And they're going, no. Calling after their name, that means they take on themselves their name. That's marriage! Seven women marrying one man. Taking on names, that means if I had seven wives, their last name would be Nemro, like mine. Yeah, you know, my wife, when we got married, she took on my name. Interesting. So, now I'm not here to condone what the FLDS, the Fundamentalist LDS Church, is doing. I'm not here to do that. What they're doing is illegal. And I know my religious tradition, the LDS religion, without the F, we have a big thing that says we will keep the law. That's our job. We are supposed to sustain the law. Anyway, doesn't that bring up an interesting fact? Is Isaiah painting a picture after all the atrocities, after all the wickedness, after our women are burning and nobody, and they don't look good, and when I go to some parts of my town, other places that are really depressed, really bad, the women don't look good. They look horrible. 30-year-old women that look like they're 60, pruned up and just... I think about that burning and I say, is that them? Maybe it is. But someday, their reproach will be taken away. And why? From what it looks like, according to Isaiah, was he a prophet? I don't know. I think he was. Sounds like the salvation of these women was polygamy. So when you're on your witch hunt to tear apart these polygamists and find every way to punish them, these women who were part of polygamous relationships, and you're tearing their children away from them because what they're doing is so heinous, might ultimately be the saving grace. Are you going to be there to be saved? This is Jay Nemro. You're listening to The Life Autistic. This has been episode 610. Let me get my pointer down here. Have a great day.